Good morning and welcome to All Things Jessamine. I'm Doug Fain. On today's program, well, it's springtime and it's baseball season, and we're going to be talking to a fellow who lives in Wilmore. He used to be the head coach of the University of Kentucky baseball team. In fact, he is the winningest coach at UK in baseball. His name is Keith Madison, good friend of ours, and we're going to talk to him about his life and his career in baseball when we come back after this word from our sponsor, the Farmers Bank of Jessamine County.
Beginnings are important, especially when it comes to building a future. From start to finish, Farmers Bank of Jessamine County will be with you every step of the way. Whether it's a house, a car, a college fund, or saving for retirement, it all starts here. Stop by any of our four convenient Jessamine County locations today or visit us on the web at myfarmersbank.net. Banking with friends and neighbors, Farmers Bank of Jessamine County, equal housing lender, member FDIC.
Good morning and welcome to All Things Jessamine. We are so glad to have you back here on this Saturday morning as we continue to talk and remember things and people and places and all kinds of stuff about Jessamine County. Well, today I have a guest who, although not from Jessamine County, we consider him one of ours because he's lived in Wilmore for years, and he worked right up the road for years at a place that you may recognize as the University of Kentucky. Keith Madison. Good morning, Keith.
Good morning, Doug. Good to be with you this morning.
Well, I'm so pleased that you came. You know, it's springtime, and it's your time of year because baseball. And a lot of people that are new to our area may not know that you were the coach of the University of Kentucky Wildcats baseball team for how long?
25 years.
25. And therefore, you are, I guess, the winningest baseball coach at UK history.
Yeah, old age has some benefits.
Some benefits. The way we usually do these programs is we start at the start. And I'm not talking about your career. I'm talking about at the very start when you came into this world. Tell us where you're from. Tell us who your family is. And tell us, how did you land up here?
I don't know if I've ever been asked that question in all the interviews I've done, but I appreciate you asking it. I was born in Brownsville, Kentucky, about 15 miles west of Mammoth Cave. Very rural area. I grew up on a farm about 4 miles outside of Brownsville. And I got to tell you, Brownsville is the county seat of Evanston County.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
800 people.
800.
800. That's the biggest town in the entire county. So I grew up 4 miles from a town of 800 people.
So are you talking about in the present day, 800 now?
Yeah, 800.
Now?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. My goodness.
Really.
We have 800 in some of these subdivisions. Right.
Right.
Here.
Absolutely. And I tell people all the time, I think it's one of two county seats in Kentucky that does not have a traffic light. And they tried to put one in one time and it didn't work. There were German Shepherds and pickup trucks flying everywhere.
Wow. So, yeah, and if you were in the country of 800, you were really as rural as you could probably get.
Yeah, I mean, I'm talking, first house I remember living in, no plumbing. Just a great family, great community, wonderful people, but just very poor, very rural. And my dad, during that era, got a job at Fort Knox, Kentucky, and was unloading trucks, just a common laborer, and I'm so proud of him. He stayed with the government for many years and got his education through the government, mm-hmm. and did really well. You know, by the time I graduated from high school, he was had a great job and was sort of the American dream, but I wouldn't take that background for anything.
Right.
I mean, I learned so much, you know, the work ethic, the appreciating what I have now, and I mean, I not that we have a great home or anything, but daggone, we got 3 bathrooms in our house, and the first house I lived in didn't have any. So so you know, a lot of people younger, they can't relate to that,
right,
really, but
right.
A lot of people my age, I'm 64, you know, that grew up in rural areas, they can identify with that in Kentucky.
Right. You know, having been involved with some youth sports programs around here in a county as big as ours, there has been times when we've thought, boy, how are we going to get people to participate? It doesn't look like we got a very good turnout. How in the world, in a county that small, was there any opportunities somewhere along the line you had to start playing ball or do sports? Where did that all come about, and how could you all do that?
I don't really know why I love sports so much, mm-hmm. but from the time I could bounce a basketball or throw a baseball, that's what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And I was blessed with an older brother that he was 2.5 years older than me, and he liked sports too. So we were always playing catch, playing horse and basketball, and competing against each other. And my dad never, you know, he was a Depression era guy. He didn't have the opportunity to play sports. So I didn't really develop my love of sports from him, although he did always support me. It was just a thing that my brother and I did. And then when he was about 10 years old, this young college guy, a little league coach, stopped by the house and said, "Hey," his name was Tom. "Tom, you want to play Little League Baseball?"
Mm-hmm.
He said, "Yeah, I'd love to play Little League Baseball." He said, "Well, we need a catcher. Can you catch?" And he said yes, and just made himself a catcher. But my brother said, "But my little brother's got to go with me. I'm not going to play unless he can play." Well, I was only eight, and they took me on the team and didn't get a hit my first year in Little League Baseball, but I still loved it.
Was this in that county?
It was in that county. We only had like five Little League teams.
Yeah, you couldn't have had
many. You know, so many kids, percentage-wise, participated because there was nothing else to do. Except work. And I mean, you know, those times I spent on the baseball field, that was time I wasn't, you know, putting up hay or cutting tobacco or whatever job we had to do.
Sure.
So it was a blast. And so I, you know, thank my brother. And you know, to this day, I stay in touch with my Little League Baseball coach.
Really?
He was, like I said, only 19 or 20 years old.
Yeah.
And loved the game enough to take my brother and I and just stop by, pick us up for practice and games and all that. Taught me how to compete, taught me how to respect the game and play the game properly. And I developed this incredible passion for baseball.
Mm-hmm.
I credit him for a lot of it. This Little League coach eventually became the superintendent of schools in our county.
Really?
And he was also when I was in high school, he was my algebra teacher, but just had a tremendous impact on me. And not just because I was a coach, but I think sometimes coaches underestimate how much influence they can have.
Oh, I think you're right.
On the boys and girls that play for them.
Yeah.
Because he had tremendous impact on me. My high school baseball coach had a tremendous impact on me. And 17 years old, I was a young high school graduate playing American Legion baseball in Bowling Green. Didn't know where I was going to go to school. Mm-hmm. I felt like I was maybe good enough to play college ball. And two professional scouts saw me compete in a tournament down in Paducah, Kentucky. And it was after the draft, but they wanted to sign me as a free agent. I'm thinking, wow, man. For the pros, yeah. What an incredible deal. So I remember this was way before cell phones. Going to a Jerry's restaurant in Paducah, Kentucky, calling my dad, saying, "Dad, you're not going to believe this. This professional baseball scout with the Montreal Expos wants to talk to us about me signing."
Wow.
So to make a long story just a little bit longer, about a week later, this scout shows up at our house, and my dad says, "Hey, you know, I want Keith to go to college.
Right.
And if he goes to play pro baseball right now, that might not happen." So they came up with this scholarship program where the Montreal Expos paid for my education. I would go to school during off season, and then during the season I would play. So
really,
yeah, I signed a pro contract when I was 17 years old. It wasn't a big bonus or anything, but
yeah, but you were a pro ball player,
and I got my education out of it.
You know, and I didn't know that about you, and you know, a lot of people probably didn't know that about you. But I remember it was talking about the youth sports. I remember one time that one of the coaches in one of the Little League programs here got his parents together. It was a little boys team. And he went up and he had bought dollar scratch-off lottery tickets for each player's parents. And he got them together and he handed it to them. And he said, "I want each one of you to try this." He said, "Your odds are better of winning on this ticket than your son getting to be a pro ball player." And he's right.
Yeah.
I mean, the percentages that actually go are so minute compared to the number of boys. So how fortunate you were at that age to not even have been in college yet to be able to have that opportunity.
Yeah, I was really blessed. I look at my dad's life, and I worked pretty hard growing up, but nothing like he did.
Sure.
During the Depression, working behind a mule and all the things that boys did back in those days. I mean, as an 11 or 12-year-old doing that. So he had to work on a farm. He didn't even get to finish high school.
Yeah.
So I look back and think of this opportunity, especially for somebody from such a isolated rural area that I was from to get a chance to play professional baseball. It opened up numerous doors for me, even though I didn't make it to the major leagues. I made it to AAA. You know, it opened up doors for me to get interviews to be a high school coach and
right.
then to become a graduate assistant at Mississippi State. And then at 26 years old, become the head baseball coach at Kentucky. And that would have never happened if that scout hadn't seen me pitch in Paducah, Kentucky.
That plan was put in a long time ago.
Absolutely.
That plan was made years before and I were ever thought about it.
That's right.
Well, so you went to Western, is that correct?
I went to Western Kentucky during the off season, and took me because I'd go to spring training in the spring, it took me a long time to finish, and I met my wife Sharon there. Mm-hmm. Now,
was she a student at Western?
She was a student at Western.
Where is she from?
Her mom and dad are both from Kentucky. Uh-huh. Her dad's from Hopkinsville. Her mom was from Bowling Green. Mm-hmm. But she grew up in a military family, so she lived all over the world.
She was around, yeah.
And she lived with her grandmother. Her dad was stationed in Brazil when she graduated from high school, and so she moved in with her grandmother in Bowling Green and went to Western mm-hmm. and met her through a mutual friend. And so a lot of neat things happened during that time. Because I was playing pro ball, she finished school before I did. And we got married. I still had 2 or 3 semesters to go.
Yeah.
And it seems like, in some ways, it seems like yesterday. But, man, we've lived in Jessamine County now for 32 years.
Yeah. Long time.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we'll go on down the road. You're at Western. You finally get those semesters behind you. Now, before you finally graduated college, because it took you a little while, did you have children that came along then?
As a matter of fact, just a quick story here, Doug. Sharon and I, after I graduated from college, we moved to Florida, a little town called Lake Wales, and I started my coaching career, taught and coached at the Lake Wales High School. Sharon taught at Winter Haven High School. And then I got that great opportunity to coach college baseball at Mississippi State mm-hmm. under a legendary coach by the name of Ron Polk. Well, at the end of that first year at Mississippi State, I'm getting on the bus. We're going down to play Auburn University, and Coach Polk, this legendary coach, says, "Keith, you're from Kentucky. The University of Kentucky baseball job is open. Would you be interested?" I said, "Are you kidding me? I'd be interested."
So this is the Mississippi State coach telling you this?
Yeah, he's telling me this. I didn't know,
in your own conference.
Yeah.
Now, who would have been coach then?
Tuffy Horn was the coach.
Okay.
He had just resigned.
Okay.
So I said, "But Coach, I'm only 26 years old. They're not going to talk to me." And he said, "I'll send you a resume. I'll give them a call and put a word in for you."
Now, when would that have been?
That was 1978.
So you're 20, and I can only imagine. You're 26 years old. You've been at Mississippi State for what, a year?
1 year.
And all of a sudden, they're talking about the possibility of you going to coach at a place where Rupp has been, where Hall is now, where names like Bryant and Kersey and all that bunch,
mm-hmm.
because, let's see, 78, I guess it would have been Hall, and I guess it would have been
Kersey.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if it were me, I'm like, "Oh, you got to be kidding.
Yeah,
there's no way."
That's exactly the way I was, Doug.
Yeah.
And I was just, hey, that's kind of a dream job, but no way I can get that. And I had been offered a job at a junior college in Illinois, mm-hmm. which I thought was more of a logical path.
Sure.
So we were driving back from this little town in Illinois, and Sharon's, I was all excited about
right.
getting this job, and Sharon said, "You mean you liked it here? There's nothing here but corn."
Yeah.
So we went back to my mom and dad's house. This is after I found out that, the Kentucky job had just come open.
Right.
And all that. And I remember telling my dad, "Hey, I think I'm going to call Cliff Hagan. He's the athletic director at UK.
Yeah.
I'm just going to call him and see if that job's still open at UK. He said, "You're going to call Cliff Hagan?" Because Cliff Hagan was one of my dad's heroes.
Sure.
And I said, "Yeah, I've got nothing to lose."
That's right.
So I called him and got through to him. And I said, I'm in Kentucky visiting my parents and would like to know if the job, baseball coaching uh-huh. job, is still open. He said, "It is." I said, "Is there any way I could come up and talk to you about it?" I said, "I sent a resume in. I think Coach Polk called for me." He said, "Can you be here at 10 o'clock in the morning?" I said, "Absolutely." So drove from Brownsville to Lexington.
Yeah.
Got to spend a couple hours with Mr. Hagan. He introduced me to some people. Went back to Starkville, and I thought, "Hey, that was a great experience. I got to meet Cliff Hagan."
Sure.
And got the interview for a Division I coaching position. And the phone rings in my little apartment in Starkville. It was Mr. Hagan. He said, hey, we'd like to offer you that baseball coaching position. Man, I bet I had a heart attack.
I guess.
So I go into the next room and I tell Sharon, you're not going to believe this. Mr. Hagan called and offered me the baseball coaching job.
Wow.
And she started crying, and Sharon is not a crier. And I said, what are you crying about? This is one of the best days of my life.
Yeah, yeah.
She said, I'm pregnant.
Oh, you're kidding. The same day.
Oh, same. Like within 5 minutes.
Oh, I mean, so I guess she was waiting for the perfect time.
Yeah.
And isn't that amazing?
I mean, it was almost too much. So I got the job offer that I probably would have only dreamed about.
Sure.
And I was going to be a dad.
And the best news ever is that you're going to be a dad.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was neat, but... the truth of the matter is, Doug, and some people listening may remember this, baseball at the University of Kentucky in 1978 was not a very well-funded sport.
Well, sure, everything went to the basketball and football.
That's right. And Fran Kersey at that time really had it going in football. They were doing really well.
Yeah, you're talking Peach Bowl, that kind of stuff.
And Coach Hall had just won a national championship in basketball.
Yeah.
So they saw me as a guy they didn't have to pay very much, which I was willing to sacrifice.
Right.
But it all worked out great, and I was able to spend 25 years involved in something I love a lot and realize... As I matured and as I went through my coaching career, I realized that, hey, this is really about impacting young people, like we talked about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
When I played baseball at the professional level, it was very selfish career, to be honest with you. You just want to make it to the next level,
right.
And you want to make it to the big leagues.
Right.
Finally, after a few years of coaching, I realized, coaching is about helping other people.
Sure.
Playing is about... Really, I mean, it's a team sport, sure, but it's really about
yourself. It is.
And so it was a blessing from God that in some ways I didn't make it to the major leagues as a player. That sounds funny to some people, but you look at what happens to some people that do make it, and it's not always pretty.
Exactly.
Even though I wasn't a perfect coach and we certainly didn't have perfect seasons, the relationships that I built with those players over the years was phenomenal. And some of them are my best friends to this day.
Just real quick, name some of the teams that some of your players went on to be on.
Yeah. Well, probably my most famous former player is a guy by the name of Brandon Webb. He's from Ashland, Kentucky. And he... was a great pitcher for me, but went on to play in the major leagues for the Arizona Diamondbacks and won the Cy Young Award in 2006, which is the highest award given to a pitcher. So he was a phenomenal pitcher. Andy Green from Lexington Christian High School went on to play in the major leagues. Not great statistics as a major league player, but now he's the manager for the San Diego Padres.
Yeah.
And then Joe Blanton, actually from my hometown of Brownsville, is pitching for the Los Angeles Dodgers. And I've had other people like Wim Van Landingham, Paul Kilgus, Jeff Parrott. I think I had 17 or 18 guys make it to the big leagues from Kentucky. So that was a thrill to be able to watch them compete at the major league level.
So you started in, you said 78, is that correct?
The summer of 78. My first season was 79.
79. And you were there 25 years.
Right.
What was the biggest change you saw in college baseball from the time you started to the time you retired?
Man, that's a great question. The biggest change I saw was just, well, I'll say it this way. When I first started coaching in Kentucky, about 80 to 85% of the professional baseball players were signed out of high school like I was. And they went through years of training in the minor leagues.
Mm-hmm.
When I left Kentucky, it was more like 60% of the guys or maybe 70% went to college and the others signed out of high school.
So the
quality of players became much better.
Right.
And the Southeastern Conference became such an incredible baseball league.
Yes.
As Wildcat fans, we look at basketball and we think, well, the Southeastern Conference is a good conference, but the basketball team dominates. But really, in the Southeastern Conference, baseball, softball, football, those sports are phenomenal in the Southeastern Conference. Whereas in the SEC is the number one league for baseball, football, all that. But in basketball, really, SEC may be the sixth or seventh best league.
So you can see that in the tournament this year.
A lot of times people look at the football program and if we win three or four conference games, they say, man, how come they're not winning more? Because they compare everything to basketball.
Exactly.
And it's really not a fair comparison because the league is so very good in all sports, but especially football, baseball, softball, women's basketball.
Oh, yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
But it was a great challenge and got to coach a lot of wonderful young men during that era.
And during your tenure, oh, man, the facilities, how they got to be improved and top-notch, everything has gotten better. And that's one good thing about having programs that are successful. It helps you too. You know, I think, if I'm correct, is that the basketball and the football revenues kind of help everybody else. So you want them to be successful,
too. No question about it.
But, yeah.
And a lot of people don't realize that. I think in every year, except for maybe 2 or 3, maybe 4 years, the football revenue is greater than the basketball revenue.
Yeah.
And so the football is... That's why we, you know, every Wildcat fan should be a football fan because we should want our football program to do well because that's where most of the money comes from. And of course, basketball at Kentucky is a huge moneymaker
Sure.
But in the Southeastern Conference, the facilities have improved, like you mentioned, Doug. It's hard to describe how much they've come, how far they've come. When I first got to UK, the baseball field, which I was excited to have a program, but the baseball facilities were not much better than a high school facility.
Really?
And now they're really nice, and within a year or two, they're going to build a new stadium out by the football stadium.
Oh, yeah? So good.
It's going to be a tremendous facility. Even though I'm going to cry like a baby when they move from my old place, it's exactly what they need to
do. It's called progress.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a whole nother person that we haven't even talked about in this equation of success. And you were very fortunate in that you had some presidents up there at UK that were always supportive of the sports programs. And seeing that even though basketball and football makes all the money, they're important. Mm-hmm. But look, we got all these others too.
Yeah.
And it's good that you've got administrations that will help support all those that you named and even others that we didn't name, sports that people may not think about.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Mitch Barnhart's done an incredible job. Mm-hmm. I don't think he gets the credit he deserves from our fan base, really, what he's done. I look at the budget now in baseball compared to where it was when I first got there. Yeah. There's no comparison.
Yeah.
And, in almost every sport at the University of Kentucky, they're successful now. Mm-hmm. And it's because Mitch really backs them financially.
Yeah.
And not only financially, but he's there. He comes to the games. He knows the players. He knows all the coaches. Yeah, he's a great leader in that athletic department.
And you need to be. All need to be. Well, one question. We're going to get off the baseball path a little bit. How did you find Wilmore? I know you've lived down there for quite a while.
Yeah.
Well, you know, was it when you came to coach, you just found our county and said, here's where I'm going? How did that all come about?
Well, I have to give Sharon credit for that. We were living in a house in a new subdivision in Lexington.
Yeah.
This was probably my third year as a coach at Kentucky. And, you know, as I mentioned earlier, I'm a country boy. I grew up out in the country on farms, and the houses were so close together. It was a new development. So when I'd go out on my deck and grill a burger, I'd see 12 other people out on their decks grilling burgers, and I just got...
You might as well be in the same yard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was just claustrophobic, and so I kept complaining about that. So, and you have to remember, this is in the early 80s before, you know, personal computers and all that.
Right.
So I came home from practice one day, and Sharon handed me a real estate magazine, and she had one marked. She said, I want you to look at this lot, and it was... had a pond on it. I liked fish.
Mm-hmm.
And so that got my attention, but it was all grown up.
Mm-hmm.
But we drove down there. And to be honest with you, Doug, that first trip to Wilmore, it seemed like it took an hour to get there. Of course, 68 was two lane then.
That's right.
And I thought, man, I can't be living this far away from practice and games and, you know, getting home late at night from traveling. But I went down there. I looked at that pond and I looked at the rural setting and I said, I think we can make this work.
Yeah.
And our plan was to buy that lot on Drake Lane and save some money, build a house later. And we got anxious.
We did it.
Yeah, put our house up for sale, and it sold in 2 weeks. And we were building. But we have loved living in Jessamine County. The people here, even though it's a lot bigger than the county I grew up in, there's still a lot of what I call good Kentucky rural people that have the same values that I have. And it's been a good match for us. It really has.
Now, you know, you were talking about you have to give your wife credit for the house. That reminded me a story of another fellow who you didn't work in the same sport, but I'm sure you knew, and that was Bill Keitley, who also lived in our county.
Yeah.
Over on the other side of the county, opposite you, in the Vince Pike area. He told me one time, I asked him one day, how in the world did you find that place? He said, well, my wife called me and said, guess what? I've bought a house. And he said, I did not see it until we moved in. He says, first time I saw it was when we moved in. She did it all. Yeah. So
he was like me. You know, he grew up in Anderson County, and he probably enjoyed living here. But, yeah, Bill was a good friend of mine. We had a lot of great times together, and I knew he was a Jessamine Countyan, too. Yeah. But, yeah, great place to live, great place to raise our two sons, and we've had a blast here.
Well, you retired what year?
My last year coaching was 2003.
Okay.
Well, I know. Seems like, man, it doesn't seem like it's been that long. It's been a long time.
Yeah. But I know you have stayed busy, and I know, and I want to give you the opportunity to talk about SCORE and some of the things you've been involved with heavily since you've been out of coaching. Tell us about that.
Yeah, my first year out of coaching, Dr. Todd, who was our president at that time, he wanted me to stay at the university, and I had worked in the development office with Terry Mobley and Mike Ritchie and those guys, and it was a great experience. I learned a lot being around those guys. But I went on a baseball mission trip to the Dominican Republic that year because I'd never had a chance to do anything like that with coaching. And I remember being on just a dirty, dusty, horrible baseball field in the Dominican Republic, but there were hundreds of kids out there wanting to learn how to play baseball.
Yeah.
And I remember just thinking, this is it. This is where God wants me to spend time. And so within a year or two, the organization that hosted us, SCORE International, offered me a position as the national baseball director. And so now I take athletes and coaches on short-term mission trips to the Dominican Republic, where baseball is huge. And last November, I think we put on clinics for about 6,000 kids. And we share a faith with them. And it's been a great, great experience for me to be able to use baseball to help people.
Right, right.
And baseball is one of the few things I know anything about.
Well, and to be able to somewhat identify with a child in today's world, I'm sure you've probably worked with people down there who, like you as a boy, were living in a place with no water or no inside plumbing or whatever. So you can identify with that. So in a way, you kind of know what these guys are going through. And who knows? I mean, you might produce the next great major league player for all we know. Because those kids, from what I've seen, and I follow this on your Facebook and stuff, they really get into this and love to see you.
They
all
do.
Come.
To put it in perspective, they're about the same number of people that live in the Dominican Republic as live in Kentucky and Indiana put together. But in this little country, there were over 120 Dominicans in the major leagues last year. I mean, if you think about that,
that's amazing.
They just produce baseball players because that's their number one sport by far. And the weather is conducive where they can play every day all year. But when we put on these clinics for kids, many of them come out there with no shoes and no gloves. And so that really kind of breaks my heart to see that. So we take shoes down there. We take baseball gloves down there, take Bibles down there. And the people are so warm and receptive to what we are doing. You know, here, if I were to go out to a public high school, especially in urban areas, and ask if I can share my faith, they'd say, you know, probably not. You know, ACLU, but this and that. In the Dominican Republic, even the people that aren't Christians, they say, no, we want you to share your faith because it gives our people hope. So they want us to do that. It's just a very warm, welcoming atmosphere. And so it keeps me going back. And we've taken a lot of people from central Kentucky on trips with us down there. I'm planning a trip in August to I take college baseball players down every August, and we compete against some of the Dominican teams, and it's fun.
When you go on trips like that, it humbles you, doesn't it?
It does. When you open your refrigerator, it doesn't look quite the same.
Makes you think a whole
lot. When you open that closet door and you see,
you're right,
you know, five or six pair of shoes, and you've been with people that don't have any, it does make you really think differently.
Well, you have been an asset to a lot of things. You're an asset now to that community and the work you're doing down there, to the University of Kentucky for a quarter of a century, and the lives that you touch that you may not even know about. And that's the cool thing, is how many people did Keith Madison touch that he doesn't even know about. And came from, as you said earlier, I think you were talking about your dad, living the American dream. You've been able to do that. Just so proud of you that you're one of us, and that you chose our county to be a part of. And good luck with all that you're doing and spreading the word and continuing to influence like you're doing.
Well, thank you, Doug. It's a great honor and blessing to be able to be here and live in this community.
My thanks to Keith Madison for coming in on this Saturday morning and sharing his story about his career at University of Kentucky and his life in Jessamine County. We appreciate you tuning in each and every Saturday morning. Also, we'll do it again next Saturday at 11. All Things Jessamine, brought to you by the Farmers Bank of Jessamine County, right here on Jess FM 105.9.
In 1934, a brand new house cost about $6,000. The cost of a gallon of gas was 10 cents. And in 1934, Farmers Bank of Jessamine County opened their doors at 200 North Main Street in Nicholasville. And they've been there ever since. The times may have changed, but Farmers Bank is still here. Still proud to be the only locally owned and locally operated bank in Jessamine County. Banking with friends and neighbors. Farmers Bank, equal housing lender, member FDIC.